Recording is started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms, RPM, and All GTLDs PDPA Working Group call held on the 5th of October, 2016. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. So if you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now?
This is Darcy Southwell. I'm only on the audio.
Thank you, Darcy. Hearing no further name, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our chair today, Phil Corwin. Please begin.
Yeah, thank you very much, Terry, and welcome all our working group participants. Let me first ask, as always, does anyone have to update their statement of interest? Okay, hearing none and seeing no indications. If staff could put up the questions we're reviewing regarding Trademark Clearinghouse Sunrise and claims. Our aim is to finalize which questions the working group agrees to review, which need to be synthesized or combined with others, and which should be put off or consigned to eternal purgatory and not considered. And let me remind you, we're trying to get a lot done today. We will not be meeting next week on the 12th. Our next meeting after this will be the 19th, and I think we may not. Staff, could you just put in the chat whether or not we're meeting on the 26th? That's immediately before many people are departing for Hyderabad. But let's get to the questions. All right, and okay, yeah, staff indicate, yeah, so we have this meeting, then one more meeting in October on the 19th, and then, although I guess we could schedule one on the 26th, there's a need to do so, particularly to organize ourselves for Hyderabad. It's not on the schedule now, and then we'll be meeting in Hyderabad in less than just about a month from now. Also, could staff remind me what progress, if any, we made on these questions at the last meeting? Did we agree on anything final, or should we just proceed de novo and, on these? I don't recall any decisions being made. Mary or David, any guidance for us on that? All right. Well, I'm going to start. Let's see what progress we can make today. Let's start with the Trademark Clearinghouse. Let's review. All right. Please keep your phones on mute. Just got an echo there. We're going to we've got 11 charter questions, 6 community questions from the Helsinki meeting. That's 17 questions. Let's try to at least knock those off and decide which should be, which must be reviewed, which should be combined, and which are secondary and should be put off or consigned to the circular file. First question, do we need further guidance on the verification guidelines for different categories of marks? Let me do this. Let's go through the charter questions, and then I'll open it up to anyone who wants to speak to any of these questions, and then we'll go on to the community questions, same procedure. So first question, further guidance on verification. If anyone thinks that they're too stiff or need to be strengthened, we'll get to that in the Q&A discussion. Is the TMHCH protection too broad? All right, well, that's a basic question. Third question, should trademark plus 50 be reversed, that is, I guess, done away with. Are legitimate non-commercial, commercial, and individual registrants losing legitimate opportunities to register domain names in new GTLDs? Five, how should the scope be limited? Clearinghouse scope be limited to apply only the categories of goods and services in which the generic term and a trademark are protected. I'm going to comment there, at least in terms of the if you got the mark, you can register for Sunrise, and if you've registered the mark, everyone who tries to register an exact match is going to get a claims notice. I guess the question would be whether it should only be for categories and goods and services, but that's revealed in the claims notice, what marks it's what goods and services the mark is registered for. Okay, should the matching rules be expanded to include plurals, et cetera? Should be there additional or different recourse mechanism to challenge rejected trademarks? So that's one that relates to verification guidelines, I think. It's about getting into the clearinghouse. So let me stop there and suggest that 1 and 7 are candidates for combination there on the general question of what do you have to verify to get registered in the clearinghouse. How quickly can a canceled trademark be removed from the clearinghouse? I think that's another one relating to verification and presence in the clearinghouse. 9, how can the clearinghouse services be more transparent in terms of what is offered pursuant to ICANN contracts and policies versus what is offered to private new GTLD registries pursuant to private contracts? I'm not sure I understand that question in terms of what the clearinghouse is provided. Maybe someone can shed light on that. Number 10, should there be a review on accessibility to trademark clearinghouse for individuals, private trademark holders, and trademark agents in developing countries? I'm not sure what the accessibility issue is, if there is one. Let's keep that open for discussion. Can the clearinghouse provide education services not only for trademark owners, but for registrants and potential registrants equally impacted? My impression is that all the trademark clearinghouse, at least the seminars, are open to everybody. So let me stop there. I've opined that 1, 7, and 8 kind of deal with the same question about getting into the trademark clearinghouse and the standards for doing so. Number 2, I guess 2 and 4 could be combined because if the clearinghouse is too broad, it might be affecting the issues raised in number 4. And number 6 also is on the flip side of that. It's proposing that the protection be expanded. And that in turn relates to Trademark Plus 50, which is the existing ICANN-approved program that lets something other than the exact match of the mark be registered. In that case, variations that have been won in UDRPs or in trademark infringement litigation. More transparent, again, I don't understand that question, number 9. And I'm not sure what the problem is in 10. So let's stop there, and I invite your opportunity to combine questions and narrow the field. So I'd appreciate some feedback here. Anyone want to weigh in? Please indicate so by raising your hand. And Mr. Evans, our co-chair. Thank you, Jay Scott. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm not speaking as a co-chair here. I'm speaking as a member of the committee and a person that helped draft. This is a member of the IRT. I'm not unsure how an accessibility issue is an RPM issue. I think that seems something that would be more for the subsequent procedures working group. I mean, I thought what we were supposed to be is looking at what the RPMs themselves do? Now, I understand that there's some issues with regards to the cost involved that maybe we want to look in, but accessibility issues in third world countries and things like that, I don't think that's really for this RPM working group. I would say that's really more for subsequent procedures, because that's really sort of the administration of it on an administrative level, not a substantive level that affects rights protection mechanisms. That's just my two cents.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jay Scott. I see Mary's hand up, so I'm going to quickly call on her and then get back to the queue. Mary, go ahead.
Thanks, Phil. Hi, everyone. This is Mary. So not really weighing in on any of these questions, but just to note that, Phil, your question for everybody is something that we will need to do, because that is what the charter requires, that we look at these questions, edit them, refine them, delete some, add to them. And so in that respect, in some of these questions, if they're a bit opaque, the explanation for that is that these have not been edited at all. They were simply collected and collated from various periods of feedback that ICANN conducted, including from the issue report as well as the RPM review and a number of other recent exercises.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. And I'm going to suggest that to the extent we get through this list today, that since we've got a two-week break before the next meeting, that that the co-chairs work with staff looking toward combined related questions on this list and recommend if any questions should be deferred or recommended for deletion, and come back with that to look at on the meeting on the 19th. That's my suggestion here. Beth Allegretti, please speak up.
Hi, I have a question about number 5, and I don't know if anybody can really clarify this. I'm just not sure what that means, limiting to only the categories of goods and services covered by the trademark. So I'm just wondering if anybody remembers why we put that question in and sort of how it would work. So if I have a trademark registration in the clearinghouse that covers classes 9 and 41, and somebody wanted to register a matching mark for something or use it for something pertaining to clothing, is that the kind of thing that we'd be looking at here? I just wasn't sure how that would work. Does anybody know?
Yeah, well, thank you, Beth. You know, these questions are here because they were submitted when we had a previous staff report on the RPM review that was a predicate to the establishment of this working group. My own opinion, there's two things, as we know, that flow from registration in the clearinghouse. One is the right to do sunrise registrations, and one would assume that a mark registered for a particular class of goods and services, that the rights holder would have an interest in a sunrise registration in two instances. One, in a general purpose TLD, or two, in a vertical where the label on the to the right of the dot matches in some way their goods and services. But we don't limit where they can do sunrise registrations. We leave that to the trademark owner. For the claims notice, my recollection is that when a claims notice is triggered, it identifies the goods and services for which the mark has been registered to give the potential registrant some guidance as to whether their intended purpose might be infringing. So I'm not sure what we could do beyond that, but I'll stop there, and Carolyn Chacon is next in the queue. Carolyn?
Yes, I just was going to go back to 10, and I don't know, Mary maybe knows better the intent behind this one, but to me, it kind of gets to my issue, my little pet peeve about how for trademark owners who maybe have, you know, one or two off marks, you know, the only way to really enter through the trademark clearinghouse then is to go through a third-party vendor because they typically don't either have the resources or, say, even knowledge or sophistication to you know, put in the names themselves. And so for me, that's what that issue for me would get towards in terms of accessibility to being able to use the service in the first place, given the, you know, the hefty deposit and things that in some respects is it kind of a barrier to some trademark owners who don't necessarily have, you know, a portfolio of 100 marks.
So, Carolyn, that would be an accessibility issue for any holder of just a few trademarks, not just those in developing countries. It would just be just as applicable to a trademark holder in a fully developed country in terms of what they have to go through to get registered.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. So I'm not sure if Ken was meant to address my issue, but I think that if we, I'd love to see that addressed somewhere, and I guess it could be in here if we didn't necessarily say developing countries. But I would agree with Jay Scott that the developing countries part may be a little bit broader than.
So perhaps we should recast that question, not just for developing countries, but for really small businesses or holders of a limited number of trademarks. Greg Shatton, please go ahead. Greg, are you on mute? We're not hearing you. Okay, I'm going to pass on Greg, go to Kathy Kleiman, and we'll return to Greg if we can figure out the audio problem here. Kathy?
Hi, Phil. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, yes.
We should never pass on Greg, but wait for him. Indeed, we should. But I'll go ahead and ask my questions. One is I'm going to respond to some things I've heard about number 5 and number 10 and then pose a new question, but it seems to flow directly from some of these other questions. Okay, so for number 5, I think there's an underlying question here about the purpose. I think number 5 is very relevant to what we're doing, about the purpose of the Trademark Clearinghouse. And when the SCI finished its work, it very much was of the goal, of the mind of, and I believe the IRT also, but I can't speak for the IRT, was very much of the mind that we were trying to create an efficiency mechanism so that there wouldn't be 1,000 different databases that trademark owners would have to register in, but also that we were trying very hard not to create any more rights for trademark owners than they have under existing law. And I think some of these questions go to, did we succeed in that? Or are we creating more rights for trademark owners, such as allowing them to apply for sunrise periods in GTLDs that are clearly outside the categories of goods and services in which the registration takes place, thereby not allowing a registrant who might have a more direct function, for example, more direct connection to that GTLD to register? I think that's a very legitimate question. I think it runs to the overall goal of the TMCH. For number 10, I'm glad Caroline clarified, because I was going to put out the question, does anyone have any background on why number 10 was created? Because I'm sure we have most of the drafters of these questions on the call. So I was glad she clarified, and I think that is an important issue. Somebody's off mute. Because I'm getting an echo, so I'll wait. Terrific. And then I think there's an underlying question, both in the charter questions and the community questions, so I'm going to go ahead and bring it out for discussion, which is the privacy of the TMCH database itself. And like Jay Scott, I'm sorry, I'm not speaking with my co-chair's hat on, but as a participant in this working group, there's a privacy, even a secrecy, of the registrations in the TMCH database. And that's hard to understand, and it makes a lot of the questions we're asking difficult. We're dealing with a lot of unknowns. And so the ability to answer a lot of these questions now and in the future would be much clearer if the TMCH database was public, as trademark databases are generally public, as consumer trust is a public issue. So I'd like to add as a refinement this additional question, should the TMCH database entries be public so that people can easily determine what's out there and what categories of goods and services are being sought to be protected? Thanks so much, Phil. Back to you, and I wish Greg was still up there.
Now, Kathy, Greg's hand is down, I guess I'm seeing in the chat room that some people could hear him. Now his hand is back up. Are we having an issue, staff, where some speakers can only be heard in the chat room but not on the phone line? Because that makes, for those of us on the phone, it makes it challenging to switch back and forth. Since Greg got passed over, can we try to get him on, and then I'll get back to Jay Scott.
This is Greg. I'm on.
I can hear you now fine, Greg.
Yeah, I was trying to go through Adobe Connect audio, and apparently there's a continuing problem today with Adobe Connect audio. I had an earlier call this morning with the same problem. So perhaps I shouldn't have tried Adobe Connect audio this time, but I did, to my chagrin. In any case, this list is, I'm glad to know how this list was collected, because it is kind of a motley list. And I think that some of the issues here relate to the TMCH directly. Some of them deal with issues that are about the database itself, and others about the kind of the management and operation of the TMCH business and technology. And some of these really have nothing to do with the TMCH itself, but are relate to substantive aspects of the rights protection mechanisms themselves, or the claims notices and sunrises themselves. And I think we need to be a little more careful about recognizing what we're talking about. I think it's fairly clear as the discussion goes on, when people are talking about substance of the sunrise periods of the claims versus the TMCH. But and the other thing is that, Phil, I was glad to hear you mention as you went through the list the flip side of at least one of these questions, because most of these questions are stated by people who seem to have had a very clear point of view one way or the other about trademark rights, right protection mechanisms, trademark clearinghouse, et cetera. And a lot of these questions could be said to have an equal and opposite question, or at least, and perhaps a neutral question. And, as someone pointed out, for number five, beginning, how should the TMCH scope be limited? That clearly assumes a lot. One could also ask, how should the TMCH scope be broadened? But again, the TMCH itself is supposed to be is a tool that is utilized in rights protection mechanisms. In a sense, it's not a rights protection mechanism itself. On the other hand, it's clearly, and I'm not sure exactly where our job ends with regard to the TMCH and the subsequent procedures. Working group's job starts. J. Scott raises an interesting question in that regard. But in one group or the other, I think we do need to deal with these, but I think it would be good to get these questions refined. Maybe they can be put in a Google Doc, or we could find some other way to deal with them, because right now it's a terrible mishmash of leading questions and questions rife with assumptions and one-sided questions. And I would like to see something a little bit more, if not neutral, at least balanced in terms of how we approach these things. And there's all sorts of other underlying assumptions I think we need to discuss, and perhaps these questions will be triggering them. But just discussions about limitations to classes of goods and services and how that might be utilized goes way beyond the question of what the trademark clearinghouse is. On accessibility, I think that whether we discuss that here and subsequent procedures, I think that's important. Maybe the first time around it was necessary to set it up in a way that there were substantial technological barriers to dealing with it, maybe just due to time. But turning every potential person dealing with it either into a customer of a of an agent or a customer of a software developer, was, in retrospect, perhaps not a very bright decision. Maybe it was necessary, but that's something that needs to be explored. Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for all of that, Greg. I want to remind everyone that this list is a non-exclusive list, and that if there are there's any member of the working group that believes that there's an important question that isn't here, now's the time to bring it up. To remind you, going forward, we're in the basically setting the stage portion here, where we're going to refine, we're going to prune this list, we're going to rationalize it, combine similar questions and related questions, and then adopt that as a final blueprint for our further work on each of these subjects. So this is all preliminary to getting into the heart of our matter. I'm going to take Chairman's prerogative, and before calling back on Jay Scott, I'm going to hit these other community Helsinki questions. I can do this in 1 minute because many of them are repetitive. Number one, does the TMCH, is it procedurally and substantively fair to effectively balance the rights of rights holders versus normal Internet users? I'm kind of offended there's no reference to abnormal Internet users, but I think that it replicates one we already have. Does it create a tendency to perpetuate the status quo? I'm not even sure what that means. I'll leave that to others. It certainly it's certainly meant to perpetuate the rights of rights holders and protect them while, you know, not expanding them beyond existing legal bounds. Another accessibility question that's repetitive to one we've already gone over. Number four, should TMCH remain a single provider or should there be other providers? I know Jeff Newman has raised this question on a number of occasions, and it's not repetitive. It's certainly one we should look at, but I'd also want to know, is it practical to have more than one provider of what's supposed to be a unified database? Are the costs proportionate to the benefits? I guess, well, you know, to some extent, that's decided by each rights holder when they decide whether to utilize it. But we can think about that one. And good chilling effect versus bad chilling effect, I would think that most relates to the claims notice, and we've already discussed that quite a bit where we have agreed that it's good to deter intentional infringers, and it's bad if we spook and scare away innocent registrants who have a non-infringing purpose in mind but don't want to go to the risk and legal expense of employing legal counsel to advise them on a registration. I will stop there. Jay Scott and then Jeff Newman after him. Jay Scott?
Okay, a couple of things. I do agree with some of the points that Greg Shatton raised about the way the questions are phrased. They seem to assume a lot. Again, I'm speaking not as chair of this committee, but in my individual capacity as trademark counsel for a large trademark owner of world famous trademarks, and also for as former president of the International Trademark Association, and a member of the IRT. I don't think that the information should be public, and I think that was thoroughly discussed. And as Jeff Newman raised earlier in our discussions when we were talking about things in the PDDRP, I don't think we're going to our job is to go back and revisit issues that were already decided. It was decided that the reason that that shouldn't happen is because it would be giving very valuable information to would-be bad actors. In other words, of the 2,750 marks I own, you would know the ones that I thought were valuable because I did not register all 2,750 trademarks in the clearinghouse. And so it would let you know which ones that you could then seek to abuse, just like it let people who wanted to do gouging prices know exactly what they needed to do in order to do nefarious activities when the information was misused. So I don't think it should be public. Yes, the information is public, and in that it is on the registers around the world, but so are my other 2,600 and something marks. And so you have to sort of figure out and work. I'm not handing you that sort of information. And I think that is very valuable. We've discussed that, and I don't think we need to go back and discuss it again. I think also when we talk, I see a lot of things from George Kourakos in the box. And I guess I would argue that, yeah, we do need to be asking the IPC, or at least trademark owners in general, what the value is to them, because these were designed for trademark owners. That's who they were designed for. That's their tool. Now, we can also ask registries, registrars, and others if there has been a problem, but the efficacy of them and the effectiveness should be the audience to whom use them, and that would be trademark owners, registries, and registrars. If there are users who feel like they've been affected by the efficiency or by this mechanism, their voice should be heard, but they are not the audience for whom these were created. So that is the audience that we should be addressing. We look in who we're going to discuss. And also with regards to Kathy's point, and I get a little frustrated with this, just because someone registers a dot whatever and I have XYZ registered and I want to get a TMCH, who are you to tell me that my goods and services, because they're computer software and entertainment, don't qualify for dot whatever unless the registry has said this is a specific domain only for real estate agents. It will only be used for real estate agents. So if I'm if I'm Adobe and I don't have anything that pertains to real estate agents, then the charter pulls me out and I don't get to get a Sunrise registration. And I do believe that the registries have the power to create those additional circumstances that would not allow me to get a Sunrise registration. But if somebody in the civil society group is going to tell me, well, .peace is for everybody who wants to talk about peace, and so you shouldn't be able to get Adobe.peace with the Sunrise registration because that's just fundamentally unfair because it inhibits free speech. I don't buy that argument because there's no one policing that to make sure that Adobe.peace isn't being used to sell malware, counterfeit software, pornography, things that I have to battle to protect my consumers. So I just think there are a lot of assumptions built in here, and there are already mechanisms for handling some of those concerns. And I want to make sure that we're very clear when we discuss this, because it gets very emotional, and we start making a lot of assumptions. And I think you can see that in the questions. And I would ask whoever we get to put this list together that they make sure that they're very objective in doing so. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jay Scott. Before going on to the next speaker, I want to make a couple of observations. We're 33 past the hour. We have 27 minutes left. We have five hands up. And the aim today is to get discussion on which of these questions are repetitive or of lower priority or irrelevant. So I'm going to ask each of the remaining speakers to try to limit what they say to no more than 2 minutes each. I hope that's sufficient. With the aim in the last quarter of the hour to agree on a procedure going forward for the immediate priority is to refine and finalize nothing's ever completely closed here, but to agree on an initial list of questions that this group is going to focus on and really get into making policy decisions and based on available data or data we're going to go after. So with that, I'm going to call on Jeff Newman, and then we'll just proceed down the queue. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. Can you hear me okay?
Hear you fine.
Great. This is Jeff Newman for the transcript. I do want to agree with Jay Scott on the notion of, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, are coming into this group with very strong predetermined positions on certain issues, and it's starting to reflect in the comments that they're making, which is fine. We understand that people have their own backgrounds that they're coming from. But when we ask these questions, as Jay Scott said, we should be very neutral in asking the questions, and we should not make predetermined judgments based on the questions and always understand the context behind the question. So, yes, as Jay Scott said, the TMCH and all the RPMs were created for trademark owners. It was already determined that there was a problem prior to the 2012 round that needed to be addressed, and these are the policy mechanisms that have come up that were debated and were agreed upon by the community to implement. So, there are some that are arguing, well, the law doesn't give you these rights and whatever. Everyone has to remember this is a policy determination that was made by a consensus of the community in order to address real problems that existed. With that, I want to turn to question four that we just talked about. Should the TMCH remain a single provider, and address something, Phil, you kind of gave your own editorial comment on it, which I sort of disagree with, and I want to make sure to clarify on the record.
I was just raising a question, Jeff.
Right. So number four is, it was my question. I don't believe it does make it more complex, but we also have to remember that TMCH is actually two parts. One part is the part that does the verification of the trademark, and then the other part, which was IBM, does really the purely technical function. It's my belief that the costs were artificially high to trademark owners because they were combined in one single provider, and I know that there were cheaper alternatives that are out there. So I really do believe it was a problem. I do believe trademark owners had paid way too much for registrations in the clearinghouse and for Sunrise and other mechanisms. So I think it's important that we make sure that number four, and perhaps I can think of how to rewrite it, but to make sure that it refers both to the those that validate the trademarks and then, of course, the technical back-end centralized registry. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. And I just want to make clear my comment about number four. Number one, it wasn't in any way what I'm trying to say we shouldn't look at it. I think it's a unique question, and it's clear that there's an interest in looking at it. I just wanted to make the point personally that one issue I'm going to want to see explored when we do look at it is whether it's practical to have more than one provider, and my mind is open on that question. Ed Morris, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Phil. We'll try to keep this brief. Jay Scott, you've argued that, hey, we looked at this last time, nothing to see here, go ahead. Guys, the title of this working group is a review of RPM. Looking at past decisions is exactly what we're here to do. And in terms of trying to keep this little database in TMCH private because, oh, my God, it could threaten trademark owners' interests, ICANN is now a private corporation. And if you want to go out into the real world and argue we should have secret databases in an organization that only responds to trademark holders, I'll tell you an organization that's been privatized that will soon be back in the public sphere. Bad optics, bad policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Laurie Shulman, please go ahead. Not hearing you, Laurie. Are you on? Have you unmuted? Is anyone hearing Laurie?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The mute seems to have a delay on my system. I'm going to answer a few things. One, it was mentioned that trademark owners and maybe someone like INTA should be asked for data. And I do want to go on record that INTA is collecting this data. But to collect this kind of data and amounts that needed to have any meaningful impact on any discussion does take an amount of time. But we hope within the next few months to have data to help these discussions move forward. I think that's important to know. We're not sitting back idly. We are collecting data that will help this conversation, number one. Number two, I do absolutely, as you would imagine, support the comments made by Jay Scott, Jeff, and Greg. But the TMCH was created as a mechanism to smooth the way for an efficient way to register ahead of time, as people know. Oh, sorry, I'm not speaking clearly. I apologize today. The bottom line is this. There are trademark concerns that have been recognized since the inception of ICANN that if it can be addressed in a cost-effective way with a balanced approach, and I do believe that there are many built-in balances in the TMCH that we can talk about later, but this is certainly a good way to keep the processes open and transparent. We know the processes all along the line. We know there is a registration for owners. We know there are claims. We know there's only a limited amount of actions you can take with those claims. So I don't, the speaker is saying, I don't know that I buy it necessarily to the point that, again, these records are public all over the world. The fact that it's been collected into now what is a proprietary database to protect trademark owners with a recognized right, I don't see this as an affront to anything. You know, I see in the chat when people say, well, she asked the registrants, and to Greg's point, trademark owners are registrants, and the largest trademark owners own tens of thousands of names and portfolios. So we contribute a lot to the entire economy of the domain name system. And I really get upset sometimes when I hear that somehow we're not contributing, we're only taking, when in fact we own millions of names and we support this system at a very deep level. And that's all I want to say now. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori. Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi, Kathy Kleiman, and a lot of interesting things being said. But I think the truest thing that was said, and I don't remember if it was from J. Scott or Jeff, is that our backgrounds are showing. So, of course, J. Scott and Jeff Newman were on the IRT, and I'm sure, as everyone knows now, I was on the STI. And there was a group that came forward in response to the IRT proposals and said, No, we think this should be more fair and balanced for not just trademark owners, who we respect greatly, and all of us buy your products and services. And trademarks are extremely important, but so are the rights and protections for current and future domain name registrants. And we are the first review team to look at all the rights protection mechanisms and all GTLDs. That's the name of our charter. That's the name of our goal. And no one else has had the ability to look at these new mechanisms created only a few years ago and say, are they fair and balanced for everyone? Part of the obstacle to this evaluation is indeed a closed database of the TMCH database. And it's very difficult. As we look ahead at the questions, it will be very difficult to analyze some of these because we don't know the data in there. And I'm not sure, J. Scott, with great respect, I'm not sure we made the right decision there. And so I think it's a very valid decision to review, should this database be entirely private or should it be public, especially in light of the array of purposes for which it's being used, and the array of questions that people are bringing to it. So fair and balanced for both trademark owners and domain name registrants, present and future. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Before calling on the next speaker, I'm just going to say, taking off my co-chair hat and just speaking personally for a second, my own view is that and this is not in regard to any particular question we've been discussing, and clearly we've gotten into some substantive discussion today beyond which of these questions should be combined and addressed, is that the RPMs were designed in anticipation of a round where people thought there might be 500 applications. Instead, we got 1,900 applications, 1,300 unique. We have now the experience of seeing the market acceptance of new TLDs, the amount of infringement, the beneficial registrations. So my own view is that just because a question was addressed back in 2012 doesn't necessarily mean that we can't look at it again and reconsider it. It also doesn't mean that that we got the answer wrong the first time. But our job here is to review all the RPMs for whether they're being effective and operating in a balanced way. So I'll stop there. Steve Levy, I'm going to call on you, and then we're going to discuss how to proceed with narrowing down this list. Go ahead, Steve. Not hearing you, Steve. Are you unmuted? Anyone hearing Steve Levy? Because I'm not. So we got another. Let me mute my phone and turn on my speakers. Yeah, go ahead, Steve. Steve, this is Phil. I hear you through my speakers, not through the phone line. So we have a technical issue here. Yes, yeah, Steve, we can hear you on audio. Go ahead with your comment. Okay. Thank you, Steve. Okay, Greg, I see your hand up. Can you make this short? We've got 13 minutes left, and I want to get a decision here on how we're going to proceed in refining this list.
Yeah,
go ahead, Greg.
Sorry, this is a bit of a tangent. Greg Shatton again for the record. I think we should probably ask the current TMCH operators and folks to come and meet with us and perhaps discuss some of their observations and concerns. I know that they've reached out to various sectors of the community to be more engaged. So I think questions like the one George just answered don't have to be asked in a vacuum. I would think that we would want to engage with them in discussions on the TMCH, especially as we get to kind of the business of the TMCH as opposed to issues about the database itself. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. All right. Let's discuss how to go forward. We've gone over the TMCH questions. We haven't gotten beyond that to the Sunrise and claims notice questions. We need to start getting this list narrowed down, integrated, balanced in the way the questions are asked, ASAP, so we can get into the heart of our work. I said before that co-chairs would work with staff. Thinking about that a bit more, I don't think it should just be the co-chairs. I think there are two options here, and I'll open the floor to whether anyone has other thoughts, and then we can get the sense of the group. We could either have volunteers for a small sub-team to look at these TMCH questions over the next 2 weeks, and in advance, I think we should aim for at least several days by the Monday before the next call. So the next call is on the 19th, so by Monday the 17th, to put out a shorter combined list for the group, saying these are the sub-team's recommendations, or we could do a Google Doc and let everybody work on it with ultimate decisional authority after reviewing the comments going to the co-chairs, working with staff. So we could we have discussion for the next 2-3 minutes on whether there's another avenue I have failed to mention, and which of those avenues would be the preference of this group. And I think, if it's successful, we're going to use that for the other list of questions to boil them down. We're going to have this go through the same exercise of simultaneously narrowing down list of questions while getting into substantive discussion for what the answers should be to those questions. So anybody, I think some old hands are up, unless those are on what I've just raised. Anybody want to speak to how we should go forward procedurally in narrowing down and rationalizing this list of questions on the Trademark Clearinghouse? Now, Steve Levy and Greg Shatton, are those old hands, or do you want to speak to this? We have no hands up. Christine Duran and then Marina Lewis. Go ahead, Christine. Please keep it short. We're down in the last 10 minutes.
Hi, thanks, Phil. Christine from Amazon Registry. I'm going to suggest that we not set narrowing the list as a goal. I think clarifying is the correct answer. I think Jeff Wirt said something earlier. We need to take the questions and make them neutral. So, for instance, we took question 5 and kind of did that already. Instead of saying, how should the trademark scope be limited, the first question is, should the trademark scope be limited, and if so, how? So I think the group, whatever the drafting team, whoever they are, they need to take the questions and really make them completely neutral for consideration, and then you break them out into subparts if needed. Because I think some of these questions would have maybe 2, 3, 4 subparts when you actually dig into them. And I think that should be the goal of the drafting team. Thanks.
Okay. So I take it that you'd prefer a small drafting team to look at these and recommend a final list, which is one would think shorter and also clearer in what we're asking the group to consider. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that would be probably the simplest. Even the 5 of us on the small TMCH sub-team, you know, it's considerable effort to get even five people to agree on how the question should be worded.
Okay. Mary Wong from staff, please go ahead.
Thanks, Phil. And not so much the how, because that's for the group to decide, but from the staff side, we just wanted to put in a reminder about where we are and the overall timeline. We're coming up to the Hyderabad meeting. We are in the last few months of this year, and while we don't want to hurry our work, one of the things that we should be doing is completing the initial review of the trademark PDDRP soon, and then starting on the TMCH. At the same time, the TMCH sub-team that Christine mentioned should be coming back with their report soon as well. So basically, whichever mechanism the working group decides to adopt, and it seems to us that we're going along quite a good path here for clarifying the questions, as Christine suggested, that should probably be done within the next, say, month or so at the outside. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Mary. I'm getting a bunch of background noise. Could you please mute your phone or computer if you're not speaking? All right. Any more feedback on how we should proceed to rationalize these questions? Okay. I'm going to suggest this. I'm leaning personally toward a sub-team approach. Christine has indicated the Trademark Clearinghouse sub-team has sort of started this. We need more than sort of. We need a real plan that's going to get us a near-final list for group consideration and adoption in 2 weeks. But I think what I suggest the co-chairs consult among themselves and with support staff and put out a proposed way of going forward the next 24 to 48 hours for the whole group and then start moving in that direction. I see a hand up on that, Carolyn. Oh, hands down. Okay. We've got 6 minutes left. I think we've... Carolyn was agreeing with me there. Thank you, Carolyn. Let me just start reading through the Sunrise questions. We're not going to... First, we're going to aim to rationalize the Trademark Clearinghouse questions. Let's just go through them and see what's out there on the table for Sunrise. And then we'll wrap in 5 minutes. Should the availability of Sunrise registrations for only identical matches be reviewed? Two, is the notion of premium names relevant in a review of RPMs? And should it be defined across all GTLDs? Three, following from question two, should be a mechanism to challenge whether a domain is a premium name. I'm not sure premium name, other than the way it may reduce use of Sunrise, is an issue for our group, but we'll get into that. Again, we're just listing the questions now to see which ones are important and which ones are repetitive. Should there be a specific policy about the reservation or release of reserve names? Okay, number five, should there be a public centralized list of all reserved trademarks in any given Sunrise period, for any given Sunrise period? I'm not sure how that relates to the debate we just had about public access to the Trademark Clearinghouse database itself, but we can discuss that. Should holders of TMCH verified trademarks be given first refusal once a reserved name is released? I'm assuming in the general availability period that needs to be clarified. Should Sunrise periods continue to be mandatory? If so, should the current requirements apply or should they be more uniform, such as 60-day end date periods? Question eight, whether and how to develop a mechanism by which trademark owners can challenge Sunrise pricing practices. I think that really seems repetitive of the premium names question, which is generally about pricing. Number 9, whether more can be done to improve transparency and communication about various Sunrise procedures. I'm not sure that's an issue, but we can take a look about whether there's confusion about Sunrise procedures. All right. Well, I'll finish reading the last 8 questions. That'll take us to the end of the hour.
This is the end of the hour.
Excuse me? That's not the end of the hour yet. It's 57 minutes past. 3 minutes to go. So I'm going to finish up from working group discussions. First question about any relevance of human rights discussions to this PDP. I'm not sure there is, but that's a unique question. Question 2, technical, how often SMD files compromise and have to be revoked? Is this a problem, a prevalent problem? That's a technical issue with the database. 3, confirm there's no data on how many LRP registrations were made available and in which registries. Is there no data on additional voluntary mechanisms? I'll confess I'm blanking out on recalling what LRP and ALP stand for, but we'll get to that. And then question 4, the ALP and QLP queries in need of review. Question 5, can we expand the charter questions? Yeah, we can always expand the charter questions if there's consensus to include some of the underlying TMCH questions concerning, let me revise that. We can't expand the charter. We can expand the questions, go beyond the questions appended to the charter. Subpart 1 of question 5 is another one about fairness to non-rights holders, and subpart 2 is about limiting to categories of goods and services. We already saw that in the prior questions about the trademark clearinghouse, so here we've got some overlap. 6, is there any evidence of gaming, of registering a number of valuable trademark names to which registrant doesn't have additional traditional legal claims? I guess that would go about to whether the verification requirements are stringent enough to be able to exercise that Sunrise registration right. 7, relations between premium pricing and trademark rights. That's, again, repeating. We've seen that pop up before. And further explore use and types of proof required. That could be combined with verification. So there's opportunity in all of this to combine some of these into more comprehensive and more balanced questions that are point us in the right direction for where we should be spending our time. It's the top of the hour. Does anyone have any final comments? And if not, we're going to call the call to an end, and the co-chairs will get back aiming to do that before the end of the week with a decision on the way forward to refine the trademark clearinghouse questions so that we have a shorter, more balanced list of questions available for final discussion in the meeting 2 weeks from now on October 19th. And hearing no one and seeing no hands up, we're going to call this call to an end. I thank everyone for the vigorous and well-informed discussion we had today. Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Kate, the operator, if you could please disconnect all remaining, all recording lines, and to everyone else, please disconnect all remaining lines. Have a wonderful rest of your day.